Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. It was a courageous thing to do.
Someone was already more here. Stories about Christopher Columbus statues and commemorations on our Drive Home at 5. And it all started when Comrade Bill de Blasio decided that he would have a blue ribbon panel that would observe any and all monuments, commemorations, memorials, statues to see if they were messengers of hate in the aftermath of Charlottesville. And boy, did that set it off. Because the moment he did that, his sickle fan, toady and lackey, the Speaker of the City Council, Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, decided she was going to go after the Christopher Columbus statue.
There obviously has been a very much an ongoing dialogue and debate in the Caribbean, particularly in Puerto Rico, where I'm from, about this same conversation, that there should be no monument or statue of Christopher Columbus based on what he means or what he signifies.
She set it off. Then it was Nicole Malliotakis, Republican conservative candidate for mayor, who had a special ed moment.
I mean, that's the problem with this mayor, is he's quick to send off a press release, and now you have even Christopher Columbus, the founder of our nation, is under attack.
Founder of our nation, time to go back to school, Nicole. And then the Gavon of all Gavons, Bo Dido, amongst Italian Americans, protesting the expected removal of that statue.
Stop the nonsense. We're not removing Christopher Columbus. He's our leader.
He's our leader, Bo? Really? What a chatroul you are. And then all of a sudden, backing away, Mayor Comrade de Blasio decided that, hey, maybe we'll put on some explanation plaques. You know, we won't cart the statues away. But others are taking that into their own hands. Like in Astoria, Queens, right on the Columbus Triangle on 32nd. There was a tag found at about 7 a.m. Thursday, don't honor genocide. This a day after the statue of Christopher Columbus had been whacked in Yonkers, knocked off its pedestal, and decapitated. And there, Bob Astorino, the county executive, was calling for the death penalty for whoever was found with the statue's DNA on their fingertips. And now another proposal has come forward to try to right the wrong or wrong the right. And it comes from a public advocate candidate. He's running against Tish James in the upcoming Democratic primary on September 12th. It's David Eisenbach. He's a historian, author, and a Columbia University professor. I do appreciate you joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, David.
Happy to be here, Curtis.
Okay, so now you've come up with a unique proposal. I will call it, in honor of Italian-American cuisine, the tricolore offer of having, what, three separate zones of explanation by the Christopher Columbus statue in 59th Street Columbus Circle?
That's right. I'm working within the existing structure of that park surrounding the statue. Before I get into what my plan does to those pieces of that park, let's just talk about the statue itself and how it's not a symbol of hate and how tearing it down would be a crime against history. I mean, you just played all those recordings of these politicians who seem to have no idea about the history of Columbus, and I think that that's missing. And as somebody who teaches history for a living, I think this is a very healthy thing for all of us to learn about that statue.
Okay, so take us to school, Professor.
Well, that statue was built by Italian-American immigrants who pooled their nickels and dimes together to fund it. And what they were doing was they were living in an America that discriminated against them, that saw them as foreign and un-American. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to celebrate somebody from their homeland who contributed to the building of the country they love. And hence we have now this the statue of Columbus. They were not celebrating the guy who was, in historical fact, a guy who did wind up killing great numbers of the Taino people, and slaving people and bringing and importing African slaves. They were not celebrating that guy. They didn't know about that guy. They were operating on what we were taught in school, that he discovered that the earth was not flat and that he discovered America. So what we need to do in my proposal is take into account the good, the bad, and the ugly of Columbus and his legacy. And in the three sections of the circle around the statue, we take note through educational reliefs and text of the fact that Columbus was a conqueror. One section is conquest, and that he did, and his arrival resulted in a wiping out of the native peoples in the islands that he conquered. Secondly, one of the sections will take note of the fact that he was a slave trader. He dealt in slaves of the Taino people, as well as Africans who were imported to work the plantations when the Tainos died, mostly through sickness. And then finally, one of the sections will explicitly celebrate and honor the Italian-American immigrants who built the statue in the first place.
Now, David Eisenbach, have you bounced this idea off of anybody yet? Because I see there's this blue ribbon commission put together by Mayor de Blasio that are going to rule on what they call these statues or monuments to hate.
That's right. Well, I gave a press conference yesterday on City Hall steps, which I outlined my plan. And I also offered myself up to Bill de Blasio to appoint to his commission. And so I would love it if he brought me into that discussion. But I will, if appointed to that commission, I will make it quite clear that I do not believe that this statue is a statue of hate. It was not built, unlike the Confederate statues, by people who were celebrating somebody defending slavery. They did not know about this dark aspect of the history of Columbus.
Would you, David Eisenbach, be in favor of the removal of any plaques, commemorations, memorials, statues in honor of Confederates who fought in the Civil War?
I think it depends on the context. There are certainly Confederate monuments that were built in the early 1960s, not so much to honor the bravery of soldiers, but in direct defiance of the Civil Rights Movement. And that's what I mean. We have to judge the intention of the actual builders of the monuments. And that's why I'm against completely the removal of the Statue of Columbus. It was built out of Italian-American pride, not in honor of somebody who was a slave trader.
Now, David Eisenbach, you have a primary coming up September 12th. You are running in the Democratic primary to unseat Tish James, the present public advocate, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and if people were interested in hearing more about your campaign and helping your campaign, because obviously it's always tough to beat an incumbent when you're an insurgent, what website can they go to learn more about your candidacy?
That's right. And you can also learn more about my plan for a new Columbus Circle on my website. So I have two. One is publicadvocateeisenbach.com, and the other is wherestish.com. Either one has more details about my plan for a new Columbus Circle.
Ah, so give me that first one again, that first website.
publicadvocateeisenbach.com.
All right, and Eisenbach is spelled E-I-S-E-N-B-A-C-H. And I like that second one about Tish James. What is that again?
Wherestish.com. All right, and on all the other issues, everything that's going wrong in New York, the pay-to-play corruption, the big real estate giveaways, the small business crisis, Tish has been silent, and I go into that on that website, wherestish.com.
So appreciate that. It's a man who says he has answers to problems, as he has just offered us about the Christopher Columbus statue at 59th Street Columbus Circle. He's a historian, author, presently a Columbia University professor, but most importantly, he's running to unseat the deadbeat, missing in action, no-show Tish James to become our next public advocate. But you got to vote him in the Democratic primary if you're registered Democratic voters on September 12th.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
He never won go a Rikers Island. Him used to walk and screw up in fierce.
5:24 as we continue here on the Drive Home at 5. To the many CEOs, the screws who've got to work the lockup on Rikers Island. To their, quote, clients, skells, whatever you want to refer to them as. We give a shout out here to C-74, C-76, a Rose Singer, where the ladies are housed and the guys transitioning to ladies are housed. And then in the eye of the storm, the Anna M. Cross Correctional Facility, because there are many units out there on Rikers Island, and that's generally where they house the emotionally disturbed persons who have severe problems. But in New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, there's a story about how 21 Rikers inmates are getting a whopping $378,000 from us, the sucker taxpayers, after they ate tainted meatloaf that they said was sprinkled with rat poison. On the line to discuss that payday is Larry McShane, great gumshoe reporter for the New York Daily News. Thanks for jumping on board again here, the Drive Home at 5, Larry.
Thanks, Curtis. Boy, you said a mouthful there, huh?
Damn right. And plus, they were eating Donald Trump, our president's favorite meal, right? Meatloaf.
Meatloaf, according to the court papers, garnished with blue-green pellets of rat poison.
Now, I've been to Rikers Island before, and
right.
I've had green moldy bologna sandwiches with unsweetened Kool-Aid. I also know that whatever's prepared on Rikers Island is prepared by the inmates under the surveillance of the screws, the COs. But the COs eat the same food that the inmates do. Did any of the COs get sick?
No. The allegations in the court papers were that the inmates in this particular section at the Anna Cross Center might have been targeted because they'd been involved in some physical assaults with COs at the prison. Including one case where one of the prisoners was charged with unwanted sexual contact, with a female correctional officer. So their allegation is that, you know, there was a motive involved for the COs to come at them, and that they were able to figure out a way to just get this rat poison into the meatloaf that was served to these 21 guys.
All right, now I understand that there might have been motive there on the part of some of the COs to get revenge. But I also see that some of these inmates are really like making outrageous allegations that it's caused them mental and emotional pain and distress. They're incontinent. They're impotent since they've gotten out of Rikers Island. It's like, really? Really, Larry?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they'll never get a chance to have to prove that or not since the city agreed to pay them. 20 of the plaintiffs got $17,650 apiece. The 21st got $25,000. And basically the city legal department said that, you know, they felt it was easier to settle than to litigate this thing, that, you know, continuing to litigate would not have been in the city's best interest.
Okay, so figure each of these inmates who were part of this, like, class action suit, they get about $18,000
right.
for getting sick from eating rancid meatloaf, or maybe meatloaf that was poisoned with a little rat poison. But the payday there, about $18,000 per when you break it down. How much did the lawyers get out of that, Larry?
Well, there was one lawyer who represented all of them, so I'm not exactly sure what the breakdown would be.
Now, that's normally like a third, right?
That's the number that comes into my mind, exactly.
That's a lot of schadol there, Larry.
Well, one-third of that would be like, what, $125,000?
Wow. Man. And no doubt, it probably all he did was really file, go to a few hearings. That's a great payday.
Yeah, I mean, they filed the motion in federal court over in Brooklyn. They attached a bunch of affidavits from the various plaintiffs. And, the thing kind of slogged along. This happened in March 2015. You're 2.5 years down the road now. Case never really went to trial, and the city decided to settle.
Now, apparently on that night in question, the average meal consisted of, now get this, ladies and gentlemen, juice, vegetables, cabbage, and meatloaf. Ah, not a bad entree there.
Makes you think about going to the White Castle, doesn't it, Curtis?
Absolutely, for those belly busters and belly bombers. But I'm thinking now, and obviously if somebody did taint the meatloaf, that's wrong, and that should have been corrected. And by the way, Were there any forensic tests ever to test the food or whatever remnants of the food was left? Because I'm sure some of the inmates did not eat all the food and may have even parked some of it away that could have been tested on a different day.
There was some testing done by the city in which they said they couldn't come up with anything. Now, the inmates charged that part of this deal was that the city refused to allow any doctors to take blood or urine samples that would have presumably shown traces of the rat poison. That's part of their lawsuit, that A, they weren't treated for their problems, and B, they weren't allowed to have any samples taken from their bodies that might have confirmed their allegations.
Ah, so they were, you said they weren't, they didn't allow samples to be taken from their body, or they were more than open to do that. It's just the authority.
They wanted to. The correction department said not going to happen.
Okay.
According to their lawsuit.
And then finally, because we're all focused on the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, it's going to be thousands of people that are going to be eating all kinds of rancid food offerings down in Houston. I mean, it's kind of hard to really feel for the Rikers Island inmates when we have our fellow Americans who are like sucking wind down there, and they'll be relegated to having air sandwiches and unsweetened Kool-Aid.
Well, in their defense, you know, the suit was filed 2.5 years ago, long before anybody could have seen Hurricane Harvey coming, you know?
Well, do appreciate that. That's Larry McShane, great gumshoe reporter for the New York Daily News. But catch this one guy, and you know this isn't his language. This is the language of the lawyer. Probably made $125,000, made a lot of moolah shmoolah, a lot of scadol. But apparently he was claiming that he was, as a result of this, he's impotent, he's incontinent. It's caused him mental and emotional pain and distress. Hey, what about when they had me in the holding cell in the dormitory, right? And they were feeding me each day bologna sandwiches that were green. I mean, they were moldy sandwiches. Now, hey, I could have used a little penicillin, right? But not that way. What a double oofah.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practice like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
How disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
Murder, she wrote. Real thrill. Murder, she wrote. Murder, she wrote. Murder, she wrote.
I channel with him. I pretty face some bad character.
You know what this music means. It's the lead-in to the annual West Indian Caribbean Day Parade down Eastern Parkway in Crown Heights on Monday. One of the largest ethnic parades in the city. But what I want to focus on is the pre-celebration Juve. Because last year, Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, had promised that this would be the safest Juve ever. And then, within a course of 8 hours, a 17-year-old and a 22-year-old were shot and killed. And then all of a sudden, Comrade Bill de Blasio said, well, it's back to the drawing board. But what did the Brooklyn corrupt borough president, Eric, I don't care about the peeps, Adams, have to say? He said, you can't shut down Juve. Butt out. It's a cultural thing. Really? It's a cultural thing when West Indians and Caribbeans shoot each other, stab each other, kill each other? Are you out of your mind? But then again, he stuck to his guns. And then I published an op-ed piece in the New York Post in which I said, shut it down. And remember, last year, the NYPD had posted flyers days in advance of Juve, reminding all of the people who were going to come out and celebrate not to stab and shoot each other. I had never seen anything like that before. The NYPD never issued such a pointed plea, and yet it fell on deaf ears. Because Juve would generally take place at about 2 o'clock in the morning on the Sunday morning leading into the parade day. Excuse me, make that the Sunday night leading into the Monday morning parade day. So about 2 o'clock Monday morning to about 6 o'clock in the morning, and they'd rampage through the streets, Empire Boulevard, Flatbush Avenue. So now, Police Commissioner O'Neill and the NYPD and the de Blasio administration have decided on a compromise. They're not going to do what Borough President Eric, the corrupt one Adams, who doesn't care about his peeps, but just wants, as he calls it, the cultural thing not to be interfered with. The shootings, the stabbings, the muggings, and the just total misogynist, sexist, homophobic behavior. He wants that to continue. And I said, shut it down. So this is what they've opted to do. They're using the Times Square approach when the ball drops. So they're setting up cattle pens all along Empire Boulevard and Flatbush Avenue. They're not going to let the Juve pre-party start at 2 a.m. No, no, no. They'll disperse the crowd, they say. But you'll have to actually start your gathering at 6 a.m. But you're not going to be able to move up and down Flatbush Avenue or Empire Boulevard. You're going to be stuck in these cattle pens. And then all of a sudden, if you get into the cattle pen, you're going to be wanded for weapons to make sure you're not carrying a toolie or carrying a knife. And they will check all bags, just like they do at the Puerto Rican Day Parade. And they will check it for booze. But I notice they haven't said they're going to be checking it for blunts or spliffs, you know, Dutch Masters, you know, and Philly blunts. No, 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 no. They haven't said that at all because, what, Eric Adams might object. He would say, oh, that's cultural. That's ganja. You know, that's medicine. That's Rastafari, right? Get out of here. And they'll have the light towers up. And the lights will be blazing, although this will be taking place just at the break of dawn. Now, that's Juve itself. And I'm sure that some of these methods may curtail violence, but I'm not all that sure. I'll be out there all night long with the Guardian Angels. And then, obviously, for the new, renewed Juve parade, although it's not really a parade any longer, at 6 a.m., and then the start of the actual parade down down Eastern Parkway, which takes place at 11 a.m. Now, there's a problem with the parade also. It's really in two sections. From about 11 to 2, you got the Holy Rollers, you got all the politicians. Remember, this is an election year. They're high-fiving. They're waving to the crowd. You'll have de Blasio out there. You'll have Sal Albanese, Nicole Malliotakis, Bo Dietl all running for mayor. You'll have city council manic people who are running in their districts. They'll be out there, particularly if they have a large West Indian or Caribbean constituency. And then all of a sudden at 2 o'clock, things change noticeably. The younger men and women who were up all night to the break of dawn will come out and they'll suddenly start going over the barricades because these big 18-wheel tractor trailers will be carrying these boom boxes that are like the size of a three-story building. And they'll be pumping out their dancehall reggae and their other music from their islands. And the islands will be represented, the largest group, the Jamaicans, the second largest group, TNT, Trinidad and Tobago. But they'll be there from Antigua. They'll be there from the Bahamas. They'll be there from a number of the smaller West Indian and Caribbean islands. And they'll all have their own following. And then all of a sudden, you look at the young men. And the flags will go up. What do I mean by that? Flags around their neck of their country of origin will be pulled over their face like Jesse James and the Bandits. And then they start going on a rampage. First, they start going after the scantily clad young dancers who are attached to the various floats and to those 18-wheel tractor trailers that I've described that have those huge boom boxes where the reggae music, the dancehall reggae music is coming from. Now, Some of the women will bend over and allow you to do a caterpillar to them. Now, you can imagine what that looks like, right? It's like simulated sex right there in the street. But there are a lot of women who don't want you coming up behind their tochas. They don't want any of that contact. And they're terrified and they're scared. And there's no cops to go to at that particular time. So these young men, you know, they're all ginned up. Right? Their high levels of testosterone are crashing through their cranium. And let's face it, they're not flaccid, they're turgid at that point. And they go on a rampage. And then all of a sudden, there are beefs and fights. You're messing with our girls from our island. Yo, Jamaica boy, stay over there, coconut head. And they start flashing gang signs and talking trash. And the next thing you know, there's shots that are fired right in the process of the parade, which has happened before, or people get stabbed or they get rampaged over. And then all of a sudden, the ghetto copters come down. That's right. You get two helicopters who will fly right at the treetop levels along Eastern Parkway in order to try to spot the rabble-rousers by then, of which there are many, and cause them to recede into the side streets. But the problems don't stop there. Then oftentimes they go into the late hours as Monday daytime parade is over, and it goes into continued celebrations all night long in Flatbush, in Crown Heights, in East Flatbush, in Canarsie. And these are areas that I've patrolled extensively, sometimes for 48 hours with the Guardian Angels. So I know all about Juve. I know all about the parade, the West Indian Day, Caribbean Day parade. The politicians, the holy rollers, the civics groups, the unions, they won't talk anything about what it's like after 2 o'clock during the parade because it all changes. The specter of the parade changes. And because it's in Brooklyn, and it's not along Fifth Avenue, it's out of sight, out of mind. And you know what the arguments will be by those defenders of this raucous, debaucherous behavior? They'll say it's all cultural, like Eric Bad Boy, the corrupt one, Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president, who has a goal in the future when de Blasio is term limited out, if he does get elected to a second term over my dead body, of running to become the next mayor the next time around. Eric Adams, that'll be over 2 of my dead bodies.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
I-53 here on the drive home at 5. This one of the most important and most liked segments. It's about the geriatric espresso-sipping psychotic killers of organized crime, the mobsters choking on their lobsters. And we're talking about the sentencing on September 7th of Genovese Capo Pasquale Perello. Now, who's he? He owns that Arthur Avenue restaurant, Pasquale's Rigoletto. You all should boycott it. Don't go there. It's all mobbed up. For years, this guy was paying tribute, for so many years, to Benny H. Mangano down on Sullivan Street at the Triangle Social Club. Of Vinny the Chin Gigante, right? He's mobbed up right down to the marrow of his bone. And he's already pled on a series of charges. 3 counts of conspiracy to commit extortion. And the worst was instructing his soldiers as a capo to collect a man's VIG, his gambling debt. And he told them, choke him. Choke the MF-er. Tell him, listen to me, next time I'm not going to be choking you. I'm going to be killing you. And then it was a time right outside of Pasquale's Rigoletto, that restaurant right there on Arthur Avenue. Don't go there, please. Don't boycott that. He ordered 2 of his leg breakers to break a panhandler's knees for bothering several female customers outside of Pasquale's Rigoletto's. In the meantime, they said, hey, he never bothered us. He was just asking us if we had a Lucy. Hey, I don't want him here. And he broke his legs. And I know a lot of you are saying, that's old school Italian there, Arthur Avenue, Belmont section. It's not like that any longer. It's mostly Albanians, Macedonians, those from Moldavia, Croatia, Serbia, pretending to be Italians, because a lot of them have bought the restaurants or the pizza parlors. And you could see the Albanian flag in the background. But it's still enough of them. And it's a Genovese area. In fact, I'll never forget when Rudy Giuliani campaigned against David Dinkins there a second time. It was 10% of the Italians on Arthur Avenue in Belmont would never vote for Rudy Giuliani because he was locking up the mobsters choking on their lobsters. They voted for David Dinkins. But I want to tell you, there have been dozens of letters seeking empathy and early release for this Genovese capo, Pasquale Perello. And they come from the neighborhood in Belmont. And those who have moved out to Westchester or out to New Jersey or out to Long Island, and they say, hey, Judge, you got it all wrong. Perello, he's one of the most honest, generous, and thoughtful people that I grew up with there on Arthur Avenue. Let me tell you a time in the 1990s. There was a desperate, pregnant cat who made her way into the basement of Pasquale's Rigoletto in order to deliver her kittens. And then all of a sudden, this vicious stray pit bull attacked her as she was pregnant. And who came out with a stick in his hand in order to beat off this stray pit bull? But Pasquale Rigoletto himself. And then he picked up this little cat who was pregnant and brought it to a nearby hospital, a feline hospital, covered all the cat's medical costs and nursed her through, actually serving her pasta vazul from his restaurant there. What a chiacchiera, what a bunch of Pinocchios. This leg breaker, this jadru, this who disgrazia to all hardworking Italian-American peoples. How dare you write these letters to the judge seeking, early release? Guy's in his 70s. I'd give him like 50 years, right? And I'd say, hey, pray to your God, right? You claim you're all of a sudden you're spiritual, you're praying to JC. See if he'll let you live until about 120, your day of release. And until then, go straight to hell without an asbestos suit, you animal.